To order at this point. Here, before we have any meeting or anything of importance, we always start with our prayer. So we'll start with a prayer by Trembo, our preacher, and then Anthony will be introducing
us. Let's all stand and
First of all, let me thank all of you for coming out here and giving us such a nice welcome. We're delighted to be here at Arctic Village. Let me, before we start and explain the purpose of this meeting, introduce my colleagues from the United States Congress, House of Representatives, most of whom are members of the House Committee on Interior and Insular Affairs. On my extreme left is Congressman Jamie Clark from North Carolina, a member of the Interior Committee. On my left is Congressman Buddy Darden from the state of Georgia, also a member of the Interior Committee. I'm Representative Bill Richardson from the state of New Mexico, also a member of the Interior Committee. On my right is Congressman John Porter, a member of the Appropriations Committee. And on my further right is Congressman John Rhodes, a member of the Interior Committee from the state of Arizona, and Congressman Wayne Owens, a member of the Interior Committee from the state of Utah. We are well represented here by both parties, Congressman Clark, Congressman Darden, and myself, and Congressman Wayne Owens are Democrats. Congressman Porter and Congressman Rhodes are members of the Republican Party. We're here with a group of the House Interior Committee to look at a number of issues that deal within our jurisdiction, one of which is a matter that is extreme interest to you, I am sure, and that is whether to proceed with oil and gas development in the Anwar. We have just been the last 2 days at Prudhoe Bay. We have been at Kaktovik, the village of Kaktovik. We've had briefings from the environmental groups, from the industry groups, and we are here for one reason, and that is to hear your point of view, your position on Anwar development or anything else that you may choose to discuss with us. This is your meeting. We are not going to speak except to listen to you, and perhaps some of my colleagues will have some further questions. We are very anxious in the short time we're here to also see part of your village. So we would appreciate that opportunity after we proceed with the town meeting. I would like to now turn to the chief, to Lincoln Tripp. And I understand that Norma Cassie is also here from the Old Crow Village, a representative to the Yukon Territory government, and a representative from Venetai Village is also here. So with that, I would like to turn the town meeting over and the proceedings to Lincoln Tripp. And we will just sit here and listen to the views of your community.
Okay, I guess you can speak from here. Let me translate this whole message. Yeah. The end war one, the Gehentia, and the committee against, from the Senate and House member,
House.
Right, Senate and House member. And I just did the Gehentia, the Senate law passed Gatsia, and I just did law, and I second the Gehentia, and I Congress floor, Hanigia, and Ezekiel from the Bill being again. So Gina and the end of the way attack with the Grand Lord of the Great Asset attack on the school by land, the House of Representatives or Senate and the Gia. So is it against it? Don't stand there, got one tiny run again. And we have some recorder, they were not that suck, but don't talk. I thought maybe I can do the first one to Sister Gottschalk, but anybody to question is the sucker. She goes, when told that sucker and she's a good sir. You said then I can never hunt, yeah. It's a good answer. Well, I always have testified in Washington about a month ago. And at that time I think I made it pretty clear that to us this is not an environmental issue or an energy issue, it's a survival issue. Arctic Village is here because of the caribou. The caribou is our main source of food there. There's fishes in the lakes and stuff, but they are not of a sufficient quantity to sustain life through the winter like the caribou would. And there's not enough, there's hardly any moose around. And if you want to get any sheep or anything, you have to go out, probably 50 miles or so. So all other food sources are not practical for us here. And you can't ship any food in here because of the weather condition. You'll notice it. We are all surrounded by mountains here, so you get a little cloudy, it's not a very good idea to fly in the so all I'm saying is the caribou is a substantial part of our diet. And if you'll notice that there's maps in the packet there. There should be one on the number of caribou fences in this area, and they're all labeled with a little V, which indicates the direction of their opening. So the caribou has been around for ages. Those things have been around for, you can see some of it from the air. The easiest one to see is right up here in the northeast area, where that first mountain appears. It's just a caribou fence. It's incomplete, but it's the latest one. And the other map is basically the route of the caribou, the migrating herd. What worries us is that if they start developing in the 1002 area, the passes from the slope down to our area are very limited. If the Kelpen area moves to the east or anything, then the pass would not be practical for them to use. I wouldn't imagine caribou going out of its way to go down that road, you know? So it's pretty. For us, it's a very delicate situation. That's why we are very concerned about it. It's our only food, source of food. So if the caribou migration route is cut off, it might be a pretty disastrous situation. Not to mention desperate. We had a period one time here where we didn't have any caribou, so the National Guard had to fly some people over the barrels and go hunting. So That's how important they are to it. Now, I have a lot more, but I think there's a lot of people want to say something too. Just like that one, it's like a gear bark on pet side. It's what land where everything is again, the perfect name to come. But now we have a, yeah, not a good thing, I position.
My name is Trimble Gibbard. I'm a minister here and also the second chief of the tribal council and also a tribal council member here in our village. I just wanted to tell you something about cabin drama. One time in the history, the caribou, just because of the heavy snow on this area, the caribou won't make it back to the calving ground. So I think some of the old folks can remember at one time that caribou having the little one born on the east from here, the whole area. And I think almost, I don't know how many, but I died off from the probably instinct. From the pediatric. And that we learn from that, and that's the reason we know that calving crops are very important for the caribou. And we've been here, I don't know how many thousands of years, and we depend on caribou on this area. We went through a lot of hard time in the history, because a lot of time we're hungry without caribou, because they're not around this area. So there's a huge chance we right now, if there's going to be development on that area, we don't know how we're going to survive if something happened to that caregiver. Even, we can't live on any store food either. A lot of time I have money in the city. I got enough money, but I'm still hungry. I'm just barely make it home for the caregiver. A lot of us, it's the one of them, the most important side of it. Even the little ones, they can be incredibly. So I think that they get a chance for some other people to talk. Thank you very much for your hard work and for our village.
Thank you.
All of you.
Is there anybody else from the village that would like to speak?
Yes.
I'm from originally up in Greek. I lived here. I moved here once. I lived here in years. I'd like to say something about caribou, how much we use caribou. even to write this day, we still use the hide for our clothing. So we use the bone for tools, okay. And we use the meat for our nutrition. And there's all those things that we still depend on the caribou.
Kenny, how many caribou would it take to support you and your family in a year?
Well, I would say about 10 to 20 caribou for one family. For a small family, it would depend on the caribou for the whole winter. And a lot of times that we gotta help other people to depend on us to hunt people. Some people will be the elders and senior citizens. So many of those people depend on the young people to hunt. And, so it's probably be more than 10 to 20.
When did they come through? Do they just migrate twice a year through here? Is that when you have to kill them?
caribou are kind of, sometimes they have to stay from around this area for the whole winter. When they are like that, and of course, it's really good for them to be around here. We'll be here with them, but sometimes they won't come around here for some reason. If they're being dispersed, and they won't come around. So, at the time, it's kind of hard to hunt for caribou, because sometimes you have to go a long ways to hunt.
But this is a wintering ground then for caribou?
Yeah, actually this is the main wintering ground right here.
So when will they be down here? In September or what?
But this is the trick of it right now. It's just around August, that's when they start, you know, running this way, and sometimes they gotta be feeding it's getting close to mating season right now, so they gotta get themselves fat. When they go to a fresh area, that's where they got a lot of food there, you know. They have to get fat for the mating season. So right now they're starting to come, so.
I believe that lady that had a question, did she just leave?
Also, I would like to say something about the caribou are being disturbing there was a couple of other large herd that have been existing in Alaska in the past. to this day, they've been declined because of people and group. For instance, there was a person, what they call a 40-mile herd. This is in a circle, in a circle area. And there was one in Eagle. That one used to be like 100,000. Now it's declined because of disturbing. And then there's another herd that exists on Mount McKinley. So right now I found out that there's only about 1,000 caribou in that herd. That used to be like 100,000. And declined because of disturbance. So this is the only large herd that is existed in the whole North America. So if it's being bothered, and it's going to be disturbed. So this one, once it's been disturbed, it's going to decline. So that's why caribou is really important to me and to people are being using all the
kids.
My name is Kais Peter. And, I was born here in Arizona, born and raised here. I was kind of really appreciated to see our Congress people here, and also people from Canadian side, but those are some of those are our relatives. And we were kind of really, really happy to see them right here in our poor village here. Well, the first time that when we started beginning working here in the village, it's kind of really poor people to start work up here. And what I really want to ask for is that's mean I don't really worry about myself, but today I'm really, not only me, but every one of us, I think we're started getting worried about our youngest people here. All those little kids that we got around here. That's the reason we have to holler and work today to straighten up everything that what they're going to live on late, maybe 10, maybe 40, 50 years later. They might, I hope to see that they live better than we are today. Because right now, there's some of us in the village that doesn't really understand English, and some of us didn't know how to write. So today what we do is we receive a letter from the journal that written down black and white, it says we're going to have to do this and that, so we're going to have to follow the rule that which we go under it, we work under it today. So what I'm going to say is we have everything that you see around here in the village. It's look pretty heavy, but it's all come by air. It costs a lot of money, but it's the only way we can get our things up here. And otherwise, we're trying to save our game for the kids up here. So, which we've been hollering about this it's ever since last I remember, over 40 years, is that we don't want no road into our village. So, this way, our game will be more safer than today. But we have a road up here. Well, I think that hunters will come around, and I think that what's going to happen is down around Paxson, I've been working down through there, and I see a lot of dead caribou around there because the highway is coming through there, and there's a whole bunch of native living down through there, but they can't do nothing about it because these people killing all these game, they got money. These poor people, they live in log cabins. So in this case, money is talk, but the Indian, almost every one of them don't have no money in the bank. So these people, the one got the money, they can do anything over these people. Poor lot of native people, they're kind of weary about themselves and their kids today. And I hope it's changed. And once more I'll say I really, really appreciate it and happy to see these Congress people in our poor village. And I hope to see you again later, and I hope to speak with you later again. I thank you very much.
Norton, I'm sorry. Yeah.
My name is Louis John. I come from Hard Village. All the people there that opposing the government, because all my life I can remember every day of my life I have to have the good meat, nutritious, that's either moose or caribou. And caribou is the most of my daily supper. There's one thing that really bothers us is they want that to be open, you know, because that's the core of where the cabin area is from. And there's a prison there. They probably have to move to their tent, or they might just die off because they have their ground. These caribou are the ones that humans use in it. And there's humans. There's resistant care in our village. We're human too, but we're trying to get our rights out here towards Congress. I'm very happy that you guys came listen to our testimony. Now, my grandfathers have been here, and we don't do some takeovers every day. We do like our daily routine. That's our next supper, stuff like that. That's living off the land. We got fish, we got moose. Most of all, we use caribou. That's our main dinner every day. What really I'm trying to say is there's resistance here in our village too, even if we live off on the face of the earth. There's a human being here that's living. That's their culture, but my great grandfather has been there, and to us the land, what you do to your children, you give them money to the bank of trust fund, they call it. And our great grandfather has been there, and that's our trust fund to use. And that's the land. And you know, it's not only in our village, it's across the boundary line in Canada. And they're human too, and that's their rights. They want to keep their caribou. They don't want nothing to happen to it. We know we may lose, but still we will continue and fight for our rights. So, thank you for listening.
Name is Albert James. I was born for Yukon and raised in Raleigh Village. I spent 2 years in the Navy, educated 11th grade. I'm a certified welder right now. What I think and personally thought I got here is we've been talking, I don't know how long now, and people think they need the caribou, and the wish is true, but in other words, I don't have nothing against drilling up there. It's bound to happen. We need that oil. That's what the nation needs. And if they're going to do that, they should give us some things that we can live on for years to come. Not in 1 year, but a year. Like we need more education. We need roads. And stuff like that. Unemployment is too high, we can't even work. And we can't even run a business because we got no money for it. Like they need a road up to all John Lakers on the other side of the field. And they don't have no money for it. We can run a tourism that way. We don't have no money for it. And Everything you see here, gas costs maybe $30 a can, 5 gallons. And people that don't work, how are they going to pay for that gas to go get the meat and the whip and water with it? By the time you finish, you got nothing left. That's what I'm talking about. Like food. You buy steak and prepares, it costs $10 a steak. To get it here, you pay another $10. That's $20. It's almost about the size of it. Everything coming in has got to be by freight. There's no road here. Like our gas, our oil, all that stuff got coming in by here. I'm just saying that you can eliminate that and put something in here in the return of what you can get that oil out of here. Maybe like some people I talked to, they said they can put a fish hatcher up the river, so we can run a salmon run up through here. That's a good deal. So we can have fish, so we can eat it. We can feed the dogs too. That way you'll be a replace of what you can take out. If we lose the caribou, we still can survive on it. That's what I'm talking about. We don't make no money here. Only people that work is that clinic, store, and a post office, and that's about it. There's only four people works in town. And the rest of the people, they just try to survive with a food stamp and a public system, that's about it, year after year. We got nothing to make money with. We got lumber here, but we got nothing to make it so we can run it. Like I said, a few costs a lot of money. I'm just saying that if there's some way you can make it possible for us to make money with anything like lumber or anything like that, it'll be all right. That way we can survive on years to come. Otherwise, we're just going to go back the same place we are right now. And Governor Cooper, he said to wait maybe a year or a couple of years, make some kind of study on the caribou. And that was a good deal too, but like I said, it's going to come anyway, you know. And you got to do something for the people that live here. Not only here in Arctic Village, I'm talking about the whole state of Alaska. I'm not talking about ours alone. We're just a small bunch of people here that's trying to survive here. It's the way it is right here in Arctic Village is like that all over. Like Mr. Caius Peter was saying, same thing. And we need to educate our people too. We got no money for any kind of education we can qualify the people to do the work. And what they do is they bring people from outside to take their place and to make the money and then just get that money and get out of this state of Alaska. And we don't have nothing here. It looks like you're taking a lot of oil out of North Slope and we're just paying. We're paying for it more than any place in the world, I think. We're paying a quart of oil is almost $5. And when you don't make no money, that's a lot of money. I hope I get the thing across.
Thank you.
I'd like to elaborate on that and also emphasize on that point that if there is, if a bill is more for exploration or development, we'd like to be taken into consideration as a compensation.
Is it my understanding that these two villages are not organized into a corporation, a native corporation like most of the other villages?
Yeah, and
in 71 when the land stamp bills passed, we had a reservation there prior to land stamp settlement act. And when the land stamp bills passed, there was a provision there for us to elect our preference. And people were elected to keep the land and forego all benefits of the land stamp. So we had our land, but that's what it is. Anything else on this?
How much land do you have?
That's 1.8 million acres.
1.8 million?
Approximately.
All in this area right here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Sushmuck River.
The two villages?
Yeah, both Minitai and Arkansas. And the whole thing that's gone, it's under the jurisdiction of the native village of Minitai Tribal Government. Of which Ernest is the chief. What we've got here is just a village council. It's on the chief of the animal village, the type of government handles the land. So we are not in the same situation as all other last native villages. More of a south.
Yes, I think Congressman Clark had a question in this gentleman.
Thank you very much for arranging this meeting. I noticed that when you were in Washington, you said that you felt Secretary Hodel's estimate of 1,000 caribou being killed every year was much too low. Do you have an estimate of how many caribou are killed every year?
Overall.
Well, I don't know about
that. I don't have to tell other people. But that's 1,000 is very low number. It's 10 different 1,000 caribou a year. It's possible. It's about 10 people. And the number of caribou killed depends on the number of people in the family. Some of the family are pretty big, others are very small.
Thank you.
I'd just like to ask Mr. Trent here, you mentioned compensation for the village in the event that the Arctic National Refuge is explored and such development takes place. Assuming that the revenue to go to the state of Alaska is 90% of revenue to go to Alaska, are you saying that a portion of those ought to be awarded to the village here or to the area rather than directly to the state?
Yeah, well, my intention was to write us into the village. We are an Indian country, and in that sense, we have a sovereign government. In the state of Alaska, we're usually fighting over jurisdictions most of the time. Just to say, like I said, we are in a pretty delicate situation here. We'd like to see that it happens, you know, we're not leaving nothing to chance. So. Like Albert was saying, if we could start a fish hatchery or an animal husbandry or something like that, something to replace the caribou. At this point, we don't have any.
Would you look on a law which gave rights for gas and oil production only in the North Slope as the worst of both worlds for people to like
oil production?
Yeah, only on the North Slope as opposed to the whole Arctic. would that be the worst of both worlds for you, because it might disturb the herd and you also wouldn't stand any wild revenue?
Well, our concern is migration route is a terrible. If you'll notice on the, this isn't a very good one as far as attempts to highway is not on this. But the migration route covers this whole northeast section. of Alaska. And our concern is the so-called Catherine area and the pass that leads down into our valley from the Swiss.
These are the most important migratory routes for you?
Yeah. So it's not a matter of the cattle surviving or anything, it's a matter of the movement.
What is a caribou fence?
It's way back there before guns or anything. They have the bow and arrow, but they're not very strong. So they get those caribou into a big corral, and they have the snares on the side. They snare them, and then they kill them off there, take them out of there. That was the only way to kill them, because with a gun you can't really, pull an arrow, you can't really drive them.
Are some of those fences are still here, remains?
Some you can see, yeah. There's one up here that's very visible, but that's incomplete. That was done in the early 1900s. So that's a good example.
Before we proceed with this gentleman, I'd just like to get an idea. How many more would like to speak before this group?
Raise your hand.
Okay, we're going to, for purposes of proceeding, because of our schedule, we're going to ask each of you to summarize your statement as briefly as you possibly can, because we are very interested in seeing your village, and our time, regrettably, is very tightly scheduled. So if I would ask you to step up and give your name and proceed, if you can, to summarize, I hate to put it this way, but no more than 2 minutes. That would allow, I think, if there were 7 people that asked to speak, that would put us on a schedule where we could still see your village, and we do insist in wanting to do that. Sir, please proceed.
My name is Gideon James. I'm from Elibinari Village. I've been in U.S. Council and Tribal Council for, I have somewhat like 17 years experience in the village government. And I see a lot of changes and a lot of issues that we confront with during those times, you know. And one of the things that I refer back is just a short history to just bring back what happened. And like in back first purchase of Alaska from the Russia, after that there was some fur trade that went on. And everybody remember that history. There was a lot of vast trade in fur. And then up to the time when they discovered gold, and a lot of people came to Alaska over that land, you know. And then they dug up the gold. There were 3-4 places in Alaska that was discovered. There were Juneau, Fairbanks, and Nome. And people that came, there were many people that came to Alaska to dig that gold up. And after they did that, they went back to the lower 48, most of them. It seems to me that those sort of procedures still being followed generally. Because during pipeline, when they built the pipeline, it's covering the
oil up in the Delta pipeline, most of the people that came from Lower 48 and worked on a pipeline, I see that went back to the Lower 48. And like these other people, here testified that do happen.